A thank you to Molly Flannery and all my assistants at Art Critical for the splendid job putting together the PowerPoint for us each time. And Kristen Studioso. Great, thank you. So, Christina, we do pride ourselves here on the review panel on achieving medium democracy. There's always something to keep the sculptor happy and hopefully something to keep a video or a photographer happy. A bit of an aberration in that we seem to have gathered four painters on this occasion, but I think we've done a pretty good job of a diversity of approach to painting, both within abstraction and representation and kinds of attitudes towards painting being a splatter, affect, effect, pictorial or non-pictorial. Glenn Goldberg, something of a mystery to me. I love the man and I think I love the work, but I've always got this sensation, am I looking at painting here or am I looking at a picture here? Mm. Is this a modernist thing in itself, or is this actually almost in a sort of tantric sense, a picture from into another kind of realm of experience? Is it just because of the psychedelic, slightly funky, slightly mystical kind, in big heavy quotes, motifs that those anxieties are thrown up, or are those is that a sort of anxiety that you share with his work?
Good question. I do slightly in that I wasn't sure how I was going to talk about these works that I do know that I love very much. I do think that they raise certain questions in the viewer, and I think the easiest way to approach it is to say, well, for me, is to say, well, the first criticism one could make is that I think they're decorative, quote-unquote. I mean, they certainly are dealing with all of the structures that one uses in decoration, but I think they challenge the whole idea of whether that is, in fact, a negative trait. I think people are starting to think about pictures a little bit differently. For example, this is a really broad way of speaking about it, but the Islamic wing opening up at the Met, and I'm sure anybody that goes is going to be caught up looking at decoration, pattern, the intricacies of it. But it's not just about intricacy. It never is. Rhythm. And I think a huge thing with Glenn Goldberg's work is space. I think the surface and the way he works the surface and the scale and the changeability of scale implicit to pattern, fractals, those kinds of things, that things can be very small or very large. And I think he's playing with that pictorial identity in a very interesting way. And so I think the entry point is, are they paintings? Yes. Are they decorative? Yes. Is that a bad thing? No, would be my take.
Right. Franklin.
I'm very surprised by these paintings. I have to say that I went in expecting not to think very much of them. And when I got in front of them, I said, no, there's something here that has to be dealt with. These are working. I'm still trying to figure out why. They definitely touch on all that. I'm not so worried about whether they're paintings or pictures. I think those are comfortably interchangeable categories, and if they can be experienced one way or the other, to a great extent, a lot of art can. They're paintings full of a bunch of things that I typically hate. I don't like fussy things. I don't like highly symmetrical images. And I thought the palette was really weird, and I got in front of them and said, no, they're working anyway. It doesn't matter what I think about all those things. So I'm still sort of parsing all of that. I think there's... they seem to speak to a kind of pictorial tradition that doesn't look Western to me. So the Christina bringing up the Islamic wing, I think, is quite apt. I was actually thinking of Tibetan paintings when looking at them. There's sort of these mandala arrangements. One of the paintings has a flower in it that could have been plucked from a Buddha's hand holding that flower. It was very much that kind of Tibetan stylization. I don't know if that plays into what he's doing or not. I am told that he primarily is thinking about sound and music, and that is how the pattern manifests. And as weird as the color was, this is actually where I think black and white are being used coloristically to great effect.
Oh, yeah.
The impulse to take a color and just put black dots on it, as strange as the choices that was, it was very effective the way he was doing it. They still look fussy to me. And I think I have to go look at them again and see if I still care the second time.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Or yes, if they're still working and if they've converted you to the redemptive power of fuss and fiddle. Faye, no intended alliteration. Fuss, fiddle, Faye.
I know, I got it.
Yes. Pictures, paintings, fussy, transcendent. Where are we with gold?
Well, I was kind of blown away by how complicated these paintings were, actually, and interesting. You know, they may not be my absolute favorite thing in the world, but, and I think there is a sort of link to Mary Corse in the kind of meditative aspect of the paintings. But one, I mean, there's this kind of bifurcation in these paintings that is really fascinating. You have these. And I had thought this, but then I read some of the press materials, and it turns out John Yao just wrote about this, that there kind of are two palettes going on at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it's really true. There's the black and white palette, white dots, black dots, gray areas, and then there's this color palette, which is this, are these swaths of very translucent, you know, light hues, which kind of are used to pull you into the painting. So the dots which sit on the surface and this kind of sweep into depth, and also a kind of play on, they're not all symmetrical actually, they vary. Some of them are symmetrical and some of them are not symmetrical. And the fact that he would play with that, I mean, you feel like there's always like two things and they're pulling in various ways. So that, I guess to me, they're, yeah, I feel like if they're decorative, it's at the service of something, again, a kind of an experiential level of them that's really quite fascinating.
That's very well put. I think something that I noticed about these is that when you get very close to them, they look kind of shoddy. Their effect is great from 5 to 10 feet back, where the dots all coalesce and the color fills all sort of start to buzz because the spotty application that's been put all over them. The surfaces themselves are really quite anemic. And again, I was thinking that I would despair of making these, because I, in order to make them, would have to be up close putting these sort of dreary surfaces together, but the effect from back is not the same. And yeah, so they work from this particular distance, I thought was interesting.
There a true painter speaks, because I would despair of having to make any painting. I would look at any painting and think, oh, thank God Rembrandt did that for me. I don't have to do it. Don't have to get my hands dirty. But Christina, you are also a practitioner. Do you have a feeling when looking at these paintings of involvement with their making?
Absolutely, and I think that's also for me a sort of key into their value, is that they tend to be not, they really are neither one thing nor the other, and they seem to be striving always towards a sort of bridge, and the application is one of the easiest way to think about that. They're not theatrical surfaces. They are not meant to be gobbled up visually like a candy. I mean, they really are, I agree with you completely, they have an anemic quality. The color's a little funny, the application is neither mechanical or, you know, done by assistant or computer, or gesturally done by the hand. That's interesting. You know, it's like as though someone were doing a kind of messy geometric abstraction, and the point of doing geometric abstraction, or part of it, can be that Platonic space that one enters into where, you know, the square is neither the artist's invention or, you know, God's gift, but something in between, of some kind of space between the universal and the individual. And I think everything, when I started going through it, I think everything in Glenn Goldberg's work has that sort of balance, and often a very awkward balance between the theatrical, not theatrical, blah, blah. And I think, also, if you even think of an artist like Fred Tomaselli, what an interesting visual comparison. He's not after the luscious painting at all.
No, I mean, I dig Tomaselli,
me
but
too.
Tomaselli is a very slick product compared to Goldberg. What energizes the Goldberg surface for me is how you get the occasional misregistration, the occasional dot not quite in the right place. And so there I have a sense of it can't be done by a machine. It has to be done by hand. And therefore, inevitably, leaving aside my joke about someone else doing the work for me, it's still a job of work, as it were, to look at it, to get into that sense of rhythm and to enjoy that minute abrasion of the rhythm that is, again, something very tribal or Islamic or other non-Western art world traditions do spring to mind in relation to the enjoyment, not just the imagery, but actually the rhythm of it.
I sort of like that Franklin, I don't think he was using it in a flattering way, but I sort of like that he said that they were shoddy, because I think also there's something about, you know, there are artists who do put one mark down, then another, and then another, and then another, and then another. And, I mean, this is part of this sort of meditative quality of producing, you know, a kind of systematic thing. And the fact that they are so, when you get up close to them, you're so aware of how that's being done that, you know, without it being gestural, as I think you said, I like the fact that they're shoddy. I think it makes them.
It's significant. I mean, what do these dots mean? I think it's significant that he's absolutely not, in any perceptual sense, like either Tomaselli or Seurat, a pointillist. There's nothing about it supposing to... It's not supposed to coalesce on the retina for us. So, therefore, what does it mean? What do the dots mean? And, why is he a dotist?
I was thinking about this sort of in relation to Mary Corse's work as well. And Mary Corse, I'm led to understand, does have, if not explicitly Buddhist underpinning to some of what she's doing, then sort of tangentially so. And so there's this meditative aspect of her work as well. And I think the problem, or at least the thing that has to be considered in the course of seeing work that seems bent at that particularly, is that the phrase that comes from Buddhism is the stink of Zen. You've done all these Zen things, and you've kind of missed what you've done all the Zen things for.
Right.
And
the stink of motorcycles, yes.
Right. And I'm not sure. I want to say that there's more of that feeling coming through in Mary Corse that may just be unavoidable from the fact she's working with such a limited color range, and it kind of forces you to see the work in a meditative sort of way, in kind of a Rothko black painting kind of way, or an Ab Reinhardt black painting kind of way. The Goldberg, I didn't so much get that sense. I think there was... Again, thinking about his inspiration by sound and... what my experience was being in front of the work and seeing the surface and thinking dot 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 dot. I think there's something less meditative going on, and something that might be akin to that, but it very much is about the surface and the material itself. If there's a psychedelic influence, and then it's not really registering as a psychedelic experience. And that might be what... I think they would have been a bit trashy if there was this overt psychedelic UV light poster kind of feeling about them. They don't have that. There's something very restrained about them. There's something a bit jazzy about them that defies that sort of meditative thing that the kind of repetition would be evincing otherwise.
Right. Christina.
Just a quick comment on the dots. I was speaking with a painter friend of mine, Ophir Agassi, who studied once with a painter who'd been influenced by Aboriginal art from Australia, which has quite a few dots. And apparently this teacher he studied with would say, okay, now I'm going to do my life dots. And he called these dots life dots, nothing to do with pointillism, but simply, I mean, it's just a term, but as a sign of vitality. And I think sometimes looking at Goldberg's work, you know, there's all sorts of ways to address it, but they are signs of life and vitality. Yes. I don't think there's a dark side to them, which, you know, maybe could be objectionable, but I think they really do deal with the positive
and
the vital.
He is Aboriginal to Brooklyn. So, our last show, Ridley Howard. I got to say, we've had one or two experiences already this evening of Christina going with enormous trepidation and being won over by Joyce Pensato. Franklin thinking he was going to be dismissive of and yet finding himself convinced by, to some extent, Glenn Goldberg. My experience with Ridley Howard was one of great confused pleasure. I was actually reminded of an anecdote from the life of Alex Katz. He says that when he had one of his first shows in Provincetown, a butch abstract expressionist came up to him and said, "Gee, I assume from the postcard of your work and your name that you were a girl." And Katz says, "Oh, I'm pleased my feminine side is coming through," he said. And this is part of, I mean, Katz rebelling against the machismo as in a funny way, a different way Joyce Pensato does, the machismo inherent in the first generation New York school. So I think our sexual politics has hopefully evolved a little since Provincetown Gary openings in the 1950s. And I don't want to open any sexual politics cans of worms, but I almost thought, oh, good, here is a male artist who can show that he's as ditzy as Kalimnik and Peyton company. And that's a good thing, because I like all those painters, but it is ditzy.
Okay.
Do you want to take that?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know where to start with that. I don't want to get that. You know, I'm a little on the fence with this exhibition. And I really did find myself going back and forth with it. I actually really love the quality of his painting. I really love the kind of buttery, very thoughtful kind of way that he's constructing these paintings. And there were little touches in them that I was utterly, you know, kind of over the top about, like that one where the two figures are fucking and you see the back, the naked back, and there are just those few freckles on the back. Mm. I just thought things like that were really just so beautiful, you know. On the other hand, I felt like the installation was so gimmicky. I mean, this was one case where I really did feel like, you know, please don't. I don't want to think, you know, I don't want to be told that, you know, there are these morphological resonances in representation and abstraction. You know, I know that already. And I felt like he was beating that over my head a bit. And I also was a little, it reminded me, I always just want to bring, a painter who I really love, Andy Spence, who does, I don't know if you know his work, but for years did these very beautiful abstract paintings where there's a real tension between it being an object in the world and an abstraction, and he does it really, really well. I mean, his paintings are much more physically robust, I'd say, than these. But I you know, again, I have to say I'm back and forth on the on this one. Yeah.
I'm not going to let my question fizzle out, but there are other questions too. Abstraction, representation, landscape, lots of genres. It's a one-man group show, Christina. What do you make of the genre hopping?
It's so funny. Actually, I'm going to go back to your first question. Use the word ditzy, and I have to say I found the exact opposite impression, that this was a highly intelligent, highly skilled painter, and I just wish... it was the show I walked out of saying, gee, I wish that could have been a little different, in that I think there are so many avenues presented in the show, but I didn't feel they quite ever cohered into a single painting. That was, of course, the point, as you raised. Mm. There were many different things going on, and I think, you know, it's called Slows. Clearly it's meant to reference, you know, perception of imagery through time. Apparently film was an influence. But the thing, I'm not sure that the idea of film being an influence, which explains the abstract, figurative, da-da-da, that rhythm, I'm not sure that film as an influence in painting should be taken that far, because it really, at a certain point, throws the baby out with the bathwater. The point of painting is that it gets all the information in one place at one time, which I'm convinced this painter could do gorgeously. That painting, Trattoria, the yellow one with the cat and the glasses, what a peculiar bunch of information to put in one painting. And it's very interesting, it's very charged. So that was my feeling about the hopping. I mean, it's interesting to hop, much more interesting in this case to put it together.
I think maybe ditzy is too harsh a word. What I meant is blah.
Very well.
That's much less harsh. I had sort of the opposite. You know, I really had the complete experience with these four painters. There was Mary Corse, who I was expecting to like and did. Joyce Mansada, who I was expecting to have problems with and did. Glenn Goldberg, who I was expecting not to like and liked, and then this I was Ridley Howard's expecting to like a lot and ended up having problems with it that I wasn't expecting. And the whole circle has been complete for me to
see this. There could have been one person you
show.
Expected to hate and hated.
No, well, that I guess Pensado sort of vaguely falls into that character. I didn't hate anybody. I mean, these are all very competent painters, and they all have their abilities, and they all feel like they have correctly identified what their main strength is and tried to capitalize it. And I think if there's something tying this together, you know, the work in New York takes place at a very high level, so maybe that's not such a surprise. But if there's something that we could say about all of them together, it would be that. There are stunning passages in some of these Ridley Howards. I was thinking especially of the, there's a painting called Track. It was the landscape that has that kind of red sidewalk coming through it. The sky in that, as simple as it is utterly satisfying. I have a painter friend who says that just every now and then something is paid for. You can just look at a passage and it's complete and it wants for nothing. You typically, if you're lucky, get one of those sometimes. And that's sort of what I was finding with the Ridley Howards, that that sky was great. I thought the trees were very dissatisfying. The foreground was a bit off and not in a way that was helping it. I thought it's a hard problem because here's somebody whose skills are so highly polished. And once you evince that level of ability, you start expecting it to manifest kind of all over the painting. And, you know, the question is, if you're not going for that sort of stunning realism and you're doing something that's a little bit more about the shape and the surface, how do you tone it down without it looking like you are holding yourself back or being silly on purpose? And I don't think that's been worked out in Ridley Howard's work yet. I think there's a lot of potential that it could be over time. And this is called slows, and maybe this will take another 20 years, and that would be an acceptable and noble pursuit. And I think the individual manifestations of his talent are such that one could hope for a very happy later career.
Agreed. I had a very strong impression of that as well.
The formal qualities I was really enjoying seemed to me to come out of American precisionism.
Yes.
I'm thinking of Charles Sheeler and Ralston Crawford in particular. But another much more recent painter who jumps into my mind, and by the way, Peyton and Kilimnik are still in my mind, but another more recent painter who jumps into my mind is David Diao in The Abstractions. Now, the purest abstraction are the oddest paintings in these shows, because it seems to me actually the figure works are more abstract. The figure works, another artist that comes to mind is Amédée Ozenfant, for that buttery quality you talk about. And Ozenfant is way more abstract when he has some representation in him than when he attempts purest abstraction. So I wonder what the abstract paintings are about. Why are they here?
You know, I don't even know how to answer this. I feel like I've said everything I can say about the show.
Okay.
This is one case where I just, you know, I don't know. I just, you know, like I was irritated. I was the repetition of the girl with the bent arm. But I like what you say. I mean, it's interesting, the idea that the figurative. I enjoyed the figurative works. I was a little bored with the abstractions, and I felt like that I liked the quality of the paint, but I just didn't feel like it was coming together. Right. But that's okay. I mean, it might develop after some time. Sorry,
Nothing to apologize for.
I don't have a lot to say.
You've said a tremendous amount, and it's very thoughtful to me. I mean, I think you've sort of helped me answer my own question about the abstraction. They are actually, I mean, he paints things in the world he likes. He likes pretty girls, he likes landscapes, and he likes abstract paintings. So he paints them all, and he paints them all in the same language.
Do you think he was trying to? I mean, I do feel like there's a conceptual conceit going on here. I mean, I don't think it's just a question of what he likes. I think he's trying to make a comment about the interconnectedness of these genres, you know? And I just think he's trying a little too hard.
Right.
That,
yeah. I actually get the sense that he has no choice. My feeling about it is that he sees abstractly. The abstract paintings are very reflective of how he is inclined to put form together, but the figurative work is what he wants to paint. And that is why the abstractions are a little bit often funky, and the figurative paintings are often funky in a little bit of a different way. That seems to be the strain, that there's a sort of a basically abstract sensibility being drawn to these figurative subjects and trying to make paintings that deal with this mismatch of temperament within one person.
Very interesting. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get your comments, please, on Glenn Goldberg and Ridley Howard. And let's, as we did before, start with Ridley Howard. Any comments, thoughts, observations on Ridley Howard? Yes, sir.
I definitely came away just as confused with the Ridley Howard show. So I agree very much. And what I felt in terms of thinking about it afterwards was I don't think I've ever been to a show where the paintings were very much at odds with each other, not only at odds but dismissive of each other. I felt as if the abstraction was dismissive of figuration as superfluous, and the figuration was dismissive of abstraction as background. Yes. Mm. And the whole thing was sort of seen through this, you know, like a glamour, you know, soft porn Vaseline lens that was, you know, trying to meld them together in some way. And then they did. They came together convincingly, I think, in particular in that one painting, the Trattoria painting, which I thought was fantastic. And the only time where they came together and they weren't dismissing each other, they seemed not at odds anymore, and suddenly won. But, you know, otherwise they were just, you know, completely dismissive, very, very, very odd. But I think an incredible conceit for a show, even though it makes you very uncomfortable. I don't know.
Right. Right.
Maybe I can ask you and ask Christina what you saw in that Trattoria painting, because I didn't care for it. I thought it was one of the weaker ones in the room.
Is this the one with the camera?
Yes.
Please, go ahead.
All right.
No, sir, go ahead.
I think it was just convincing in terms of the way that with like I said, with all of the other ones, I felt that that there was a very much a chasm, you know, a separation between you have this abstraction, you have this figuration, and then for me that was the Trattoria painting was the focus of the entire show, because it was this, you know, unassuming thing in which both came together kind of comfortably, and suddenly it sat there, and it was like a moment of relief, because there was so much tension and going sort of, you know, back and forth from one to the other, and then all of a sudden you had this space, you know, in a trattoria no less, where you're sort of, you can sit down, and there's kind of like this moment of relief, and you sort of breathe this sigh, and you're like, oh, okay, you know, finally, you know, I guess I get it. So I guess that's why I liked it more because I was relieved than anything else.
Okay. More comments on Ridley Howard. Yes, at the back.
I have a question about what you think of this show relative to the last show that Ridley Howard had, and if you think this is an enormous departure, or if you just want to make any statements about this show compared to that. The scale was different. The abstraction was sort of different.
Yes. Not personally qualified to answer it. Is anybody, no, Franklin?
I am almost positive I saw these works, and I wasn't able to check on that before. I have... Okay, this is going to be a silly thing to put on the record, so I apologize for this, but basically, I am almost positive that I saw that show, and if I am correct about that, I think the difference between... It was all figures, right? There was no abstraction in it at all? Now, did you see this show?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so you saw the previous one.
It was at Leo Koenig, and they were large-scale women in trains. It was
women
much
in trains,
more
and in interiors in general, right? I remember a figure on a bed.
Yeah.
Okay, so I did see this. I'm very glad of that. I found that show to be a more convincing statement. I think that, see, this is the thing, and if you are going to be an inconsistent artist, should you go ahead and just show the fact that you're an inconsistent artist, or should you edit yourself so that when you go up on the wall, you look very consistent? I think there are arguments to be made in both directions. I thought that show made a big enough impression on me that when I saw his work again, not knowing whether that work was his or not, it was like, oh, it's him. There is something very strong going on in that work. That I think is where I feel the talent coming through. His sense of design, his sense of putting paint down. There is a lot of really good to be had in those paintings. This is why I write and don't speak.
Okay.
I'm trying to get it all smoothed out and perfect. But I think there's two different schools of thought. I think this was a very revealing thing to do, in that it was an effort to take a thought process and put it up on the wall, knowing that it was going to look inconsistent. I think maybe that speaks of a certain kind of confidence that you get for having put up a very strong, consistent show. That demonstrates to the world that you're capable of this, and now that you've done it, you can go put your process up and see if that holds together, or maybe it doesn't, and maybe you don't care quite as much because you've been there.
Right. Great. So let's have some comments on Glenn Goldberg. No questions, just comments, if I could put in that request. If you have a question, turn it into a statement. Glenn Goldberg, the tantric, the dotty, the picture, the painting, the Islamic, the transcendental.
I thought the comment of comparing it to jazz was very important and descriptive, because the dots, I mean, like in jazz, you're bending the note and making it different, and that's what makes it jazz.
Fantastic. And some great drummer once said that by the time you've played that beat 20 times, 24 times, it's not the same as when it first started. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about that looking at these. The 200th dot isn't the same as the 10th one. Mm-hmm. And there's a cumulative effect that you get.
Mm-hmm. Right. Excellent. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. See you next time for the Whitney Biennial. Thank you to my panel.